Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Educating Josh, where the three of us, James O'Neill, I, Luke Cupforth, and our special guest this week, Jake Edwards, bring together three of the most divisive stories of the week. Our wonderful Josh Winslay will have 20 seconds to respond with his gut feeling on the story with absolutely no research, after which we will have an attempt at educating Josh. Make sure you stick around to the end for the quickfire round, which includes some of your questions from social media. Subscribe and leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. Lucy is away this week. Guys, are you missing Lucy?
Well, I'm she's so not away. Upset. She's got a gorgeous new puppy.
I'm actually missing her dog.
That she's having to look after.
You're missing her dog and you've not even met her dog.
I want to meet her dog.
Lucy has got a new dog and so she couldn't come in this week, but she has assured us she's going to bring the dog in sometime. So we'll try and get it to like snuffle into the microphone.
We do have to put up with Jake this week.
Yes. So Jake, I will quickly introduce you. I've written a nice little intro for you. Jake is a musician and YouTuber known for his videos on gender, trans topics, and other LGBTQ issues, and describes himself on Twitter as a genderqueer gentleman, which I just really loved and I wanted to include.
I mean, you can't be a gentleman anymore. It's problematic, Luke.
Is it, Jake? Official line from you?
It's not problematic because I'm trans, and if you say anything against me, then you're transphobic and I don't
There we go.
See? It's going to be one of those weeks, guys.
Okay, so I have a couple of tweets I wanted to read to you. Josh, you're not going to like the first one. So, Menino said, I really feel that you've got the title all wrong. It should be educating each other. Josh almost never gets educated. And then Josh's mum replied, welcome to the Winslade household, educated by Josh for the last 26 years.
I mean, why wouldn't I like that tweet? It states how you failed to educate me.
Okay, we don't like the tweet and whatever. Lastly, a little update. Luca, who you know we spoke about last week, who's been running to our podcast.
I remember Luca
said, I just listened to the podcast whilst running. I heard my name, screamed, and ran extra fast. And then I finished in my quickest time ever.
So they didn't stop.
No, that's fantastic, isn't it?
Brilliant.
Well done, us.
Well done, Luca.
So, James, you did the first story last week. How did your story perform in the polls?
I did do the first story last week. My question was, is the term Beachbody Ready offensive? And on Twitter, 61% of people said no.
So agree with Josh and you guys, actually, and not me.
But basically not you.
I did on my own. However, Manino also... Oh, Manino's back. Manino gets a lot of airtime today.
We
should be more concerned with having a good body the rest of the year. We put too much concern on our image and not being healthy and beautiful. And in that way, I find Beachbody Ready offensive. What do you think of that?
Entitled to that opinion. It's wrong, but...
Do you not think it's weird that we think, we need to slim down and be healthy for just these 3 months and the rest of the time...
But I don't think that's what we think. No one's saying they think that. It's just a marketing term or a way of getting people into it. There's other terms that happen in the winter. There's other terms that happen in the autumn. Like, you're not exclusive.
Spooning in the Cadbury's. All right. Well, Lucy's story of a second. I'll take Lucy's story on because she's off with a dog. Lucky Lucy. And the question was, should taking study drugs be classed as cheating? We had a very divided audience on this. Basically 50-50. 49% no, 46% yes. However, Eloise pointed out, the mark that you get, which may or may not be affected by these drugs, does affect everyone else's grades because the grades are determined by moderation. Basically, they set grade boundaries after the test, as far as we're aware. So that's an interesting thing to take into account. And the last story of the week was mine. It was, is it sexist to prefer a man commentating football? You guys all basically said no, and that's what our audience said. They said 53% no, 39% yes.
Quite surprised about that one.
We had so much response on this one, and Eve sent us a really good message saying that as a girl, and also as somebody who is mixed race, all the time she experiences subtle undertones that aren't literally in what someone's actually saying. But she said, keep discussing the topics because it's really good that it gets people talking.
Yeah, it's really good.
That makes
fantastic. Sense. All right, it's time for the first story of the week, and that is James's story.
Oh my lord, it's me. Josh, my story comes from The Times this week, and the headline is, Schoolgirls Face Ban on Skirts. These are the three things you need to know. At least 40 schools in England have stopped girls from wearing skirts, while others are consulting on a ban. The change comes as schools opt for gender-neutral uniforms to cater for transgender pupils. Some feminists have condemned the move, arguing that all children should have a choice. American writer Naomi Wolf said, I believe that if everyone is offered the option of both skirts and trousers, everyone can find his, her, or their comfortable fit. Female pupils in Bury have started a petition against an impending ban at their school, arguing that it sexualizes pupils' bodies and that wearing skirts gives them confidence. My question to you, Josh, is, should skirts be banned so that everyone is dressed equally?
20 seconds, Josh. Go.
Absolutely not. Skirts should not be banned at all. Everyone should just be able to wear what they want. So my thing with school uniforms is, taking it away from sexuality and like that for a little bit, having a uniform is good because it makes everyone equal, but even with a uniform, you then get into the, and what it used to be for me at school is the class system. So if your shoes weren't from Clarks, if you know, how expensive is that person's shoes? And that would then put me into a certain zone of people and I'd be judged for that. So I think you're always going to get some form of judgment from what you're wearing. We're horrible when we're younger and when we're children, most of us. Yeah. And we judge each other a lot. So it should be open and you should be able to wear whatever you want, because having a uniform doesn't work, because there's always going to be some form of judgment. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I actually kind of agree with you in that I think the approach they're taking is that if they have gendered clothing or gendered uniforms, that they have separate ones for boys and girls, that you have to wear one if you're a girl and you have to wear the other if you're a boy. Whereas they've now going, oh, look how progressive we are. We're just taking away one of them. What I think is that they should just let people choose what they want to wear.
Yeah, and what if a boy feels more comfortable wearing a skirt and identifies with that? Like, I don't see the problem with that.
Yeah.
It's really contradictory because they're trying to say they're taking away one thing to not oppress certain people, but that action in itself is oppressive. You're saying, yeah. I'm taking away your right to choose and your freedom of clothing to not oppress you.
Yeah, so we don't want to oppress this group of people, so we're going to oppress everybody.
Everybody else.
That's the solution.
We're making our school more free by banning these clothing items.
Yeah, rather than educate and, you know, bring people up and make them more open-minded, let's oppress.
In a way, it seems like they're trying to pin this on trans people by saying, we're doing this because trans people exist and we can't oppress them now. It's like, why are you saying that this is a trans issue? This is a gender issue.
It's actually gender fluidity
rather than saying, oh, this is about trans people, so it's their fault that we're banning skirts.
And it could make it worse because the people that are forced to not wear skirts go, oh, it's the trans people's fault.
But also, again, they're saying, oh, we're doing this for trans people. But if you think about the trans girls that are in school that now don't have the option to wear skirts, they're going to be pushed into something that is perceived to be more masculine and be very uncomfortable by that.
Because it may well have been that somebody who's grown up and is a trans woman, has spent their entire life going, I can't wait to finally be able to wear a skirt and express who I am in public. And then they go, oh, well, I can't now, so that was kind of nothing.
Kind of, but school isn't a platform to express yourself. Like, I don't think anyone, you know, you can express yourself when you're outside of school, in your own free time, you know, that sort of thing. This is, I think you're completely right, Jake. Like, it is weird. It's like they're going, let's oppress everyone just so some people aren't oppressed, and that will then shift blame onto a group of people that are right now trying to, you know, fight to be more accepted and to be more confident in themselves. And instead, they're going to have an entire school looking at them going, this is your fault. I'm a girl.
and I should be allowed to wear a skirt and I can't because of you, and that's going to be awful. That's going to, is that not going to generate, like, more bullying at school?
Schools just going, oh, don't shoot the messenger.
The third point here was that they are saying that the ban sexualizes bodies. Now, there was a story a while back about skirts being banned in schools because it distracted the boys because the girls were wearing skirts.
Educate the boys.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I completely agree. Calm the boys down.
They need to calm down, yeah.
And are you against...
Someone give them a cold shower.
Mandatory cold showers for all boys every morning.
All boys until they learn.
And are you against... Because in your intro, it sounded to me like you were against uniform entirely. Like, we should just be going to school in whatever clothes.
I don't think I was always against uniform at first. Like I said, I thought it's a good thing because it puts everyone on an equal platform. And that does make sense. Or it did make sense. But there's always something little. There's... What if you can't afford an iron at home?
When everyone's dressed the same,
or...
people start noticing the subtler
differences.
Details.
Yeah, the subtler differences.
The way your hair is, or the way, you know, what accessories you wear.
Yeah, and, you know, uniform is a form of oppression, making everyone dress the same. You know, they do it in prison.
I don't think it's a form of oppression. Have you seen Mean Girls? Like, girls get really mean when they're allowed to wear whatever they like.
Yeah, but you're allowed to express yourself more. So in Mean Girls, they're using their expression to bully each other. But yes, you're getting bullied because you're expressing yourself this way and they're expressing themselves that way. But you're expressing yourself. So you're being allowed the opportunity to express yourself.
See, I went to an all-girls school and wearing skirts was like a big deal in my school. It wasn't a uniform thing. There was no like, oh, everybody's wearing one type of skirt. Skirts were... part of a hierarchy in the way that you weren't just wearing a skirt. It was all about the length, the style of the skirt. Is it a pencil skirt?
Well, yeah.
Like, everybody's like rocking up to school and rolling them up, and it's like depending on where your skirt is.
Depending on the height of your skirt.
Yeah,
it's
depends.
Same with boys,
like,
in shorts. In
yeah, and it depended on how popular you are. So I guess that's kind of almost leaning towards in favor of banning skirts, or just at least being more strict about what skirts you can wear, because it's not just about the boys sexualizing the girls, it's about the girls kind of sexualizing themselves
as well, which does happen. But is that, at what age does that become your right?
I would say 16. I'm not gonna lie, I'm just gonna throw it out there. Like, if you're of the legal age, you should be allowed to
sexualize yourself. Yeah I agree. You can have a
in school though.
Well, kind of anywhere.
It's a place, like, of learning.
It is a place of learning, but also you are starting to become a social person. You're learning your social skills there. So if you're taking away everybody's right to express anything about themselves, you're limiting somebody's social growth, and that's going to have a knock-on effect to them during
their
life.
Yeah, you're there to educate yourself.
Yeah.
And one other thing there's been discussion about is that a ban on skirts may make Muslim students more comfortable. What do you think about that? Because part of a Muslim belief is about covering up your body and not sexualizing yourself.
Again, that's banning other people, not them. They're not forced to wear skirts. As far as I'm aware, Muslims can wear what they want to and what adheres with their religion and their practices. So again, that's condemning one set of people to oppress everyone as a solution.
Sure, sure. I think that is part of legislation in schools, that you're allowed your freedom to express your religion in whatever way you want to.
Yeah.
So nobody has the right to take that away from you. So it's not about taking away their rights. It's about trying to infringe on somebody else's rights.
Yeah, I used to get really frustrated at school. Like, in school, I had long black hair, black nail paint.
Oh my God, really?
Oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Please put some pictures
Bring
on
it
Twitter.
Back. So,
and I used to get into trouble all the time because obviously they don't like you painting your nails and things like that. And that used to annoy me and I didn't learn anything that I then, you know, I've kind of, you know, I've got tattoos and things like that because I wouldn't work at a place that wouldn't accept that. You know,
exactly.
That's what I believe. So that's me expressing myself. And I think schools are, I don't know, any body that has any form of control sometimes seems to take it too far, don't they? So.
Okay, and the last thing I'm thinking is, how does everyone feel about the idea of the alternative solution to this is we need to start normalizing the idea of a guy wearing a skirt? And so do you think that's something that maybe should be done in schools?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. I just think letting people, and then people will do it naturally.
Yeah, what do you mean by normalizing?
Normalizing the idea that anyone can wear whatever they want.
So just... like, not looking at a skirt and saying that's a skirt for a girl. You just say that's a skirt. It's small things, it's subtle things about your language, about what you imply
from
about an article of clothing. Not just from the teachers, but from the media, from other pupils, the way you're writing this narrative into the education itself.
Yeah, and it is interesting actually, because in high fashion, in that like the top end of fashion,
they
it is very normal for men to wear skirts. And so it is kind of strange that it hasn't trickled all the way down yet.
High fashion is very, very gender fluid.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because it's run by lots of gay people.
We know what we're doing.
Okay, well, you can let us know what you think.
Keep that in, please.
Twitter. Yeah, we'll keep that in. You can let us know what you think on Twitter in our polls at Educating Josh. It's time for the second story of the week. That's my story. Josh, my story this week comes from The Economist, our good friends at The Economist, and the story
Hello,
is...
Hello, Economist.
Hello, Economist.
Hello, Economist.
We love you. Trump administration wants to expand immigrant family detention. Here are the three things you need to know. The Trump administration has ended its policy of separating undocumented migrant children from their parents. However, the administration plans to expand the use of family detention, which will see migrant families detained indefinitely while their cases are heard. The Trump administration has significantly hardened the country's policies regarding illegal immigration. Supporters of Trump's zero-tolerance policy on immigration think that a country's first obligation should be to the well-being of its own citizens. However, those in favour of reform argue that the majority of migrants are law-abiding and that migration leads to economic growth. My question for you, Josh, is, do you think economically stable countries have a moral obligation to allow migrants in? 20 seconds, Josh, go.
I don't think they have a moral obligation to allow them in at all. No, I don't.
You never use these 20 seconds, Josh. You've got 20 whole seconds.
Well, I don't need to. I think the countries that these people are leaving have a moral obligation to improve that country so that people don't have to leave. I think it's strange how the onus is put on the country they leave to go, well, this person has made a decision to leave and enter your country, and you must make it okay for them. And, you know, there are legal ways of doing it. And in going back to Trump's thing, it's like he's detaining illegal immigrants.
Yeah, I find this topic really hard to talk about because in Australia, this stuff isn't really, at least America's stuff and Britain's stuff, isn't really talked about because they're dealing with their own, stop the boats and...
Australia, it's really interesting. So, for example, like Nigel Farage, what's your basic opinion of him?
I don't like him, but I feel like you're going to tell me I'm wrong on that.
You don't like him, and you would probably say he's quite racist, maybe.
No, not just, undertones. Yes, I would say there's a racial undertone to what he says.
So his policies that he wants for the UK are more in line with what Australia's are currently. He wants a points-based system. He wants to restrict it. He wants to allow people with a certain level of education in and other people not. And that is left-wing propaganda that is then racist. It's not racist at all. He's not, you know, singling out their color. He's not singling out anything to do with their race. He's singling out their education and their ability. I don't agree with it. I don't want a points-based system at all, but I don't think it's racist. And I also don't think it's racist to go, this country doesn't want to accept immigrants right now.
But I would argue that basically what you're saying there about whether they are educated, whether they're skilled, whether whatever, a lot of the time, the fact that they are not educated or the fact they're not trained in certain things is not their fault. It's because they are from a country that doesn't offer the same things as we do. And so we all have a general baseline amount of education, right? Because we were born into a stable, economically thriving country. And it's not the fault of that individual that they shot out of a vagina in a different country that doesn't have as much money.
No, it's not their fault. It's not my fault I wasn't born to a family and inherited a £2 million trust fund, but I still have no entitlement to it. Nobody's entitled to anything. Yes, it's a nice, lovely idea that we say to ourselves, oh yes, we're lucky, so we, you know, other people come here and you come and be lucky with us. I'd absolutely love to do that. I don't know if England's in a current... is able to do that right now. You know, I don't care if you're white, black, Asian, whatever. The whites, blacks and Asians in the UK right now are struggling to find work.
But as far as I've seen, the amount of money taken out of our system by people coming into the country is a lot less than the amount of money put into the system. And you've got to remember, we don't have a set amount of money. Money is generated by people working. So you bring more people in, more people are working, more money is made.
Yes, but those people that are coming in and need jobs, and doesn't it make sense to educate the people that currently don't have jobs and give them those jobs before bringing other people in? But like going back to the question, imagine you're a family from Syria, for example, and you're relocated to the UK. You're in an alien world. The culture is completely different. When they apply for asylum in the UK, pretty much most of the time in the UK, it's already declined. That cost and that whole process is ridiculous. So they apply, the money that's spent on those court cases, on all that action, imagine if that was spent on sending it back to Syria. So a
army protected camp that's in their country, in the culture that they know and are aware of, with other people that are like them, speaking the same language, in an environment that they're comfortable with and fully supported by the leading countries of this world who do have the means and resources to protect them within their own country. And majority of the time, we've caused the trouble in their country anyway. So it's, do you know what I mean? Like, them coming over here is, it must be gut-wrenching and so hard. So why is the first solution not help them there?
You're basically saying it would be nicer if we could just make their country better so they can stay at home, which I agree with. But in the short term, should we be allowing, as stronger countries, be allowing the individuals who are struggling to come into our country and thrive in our country? Because we have no God-given right to this country, nor do they. We're all human. We're all born on this earth.
It's kind of interesting. Like, you know when you're on a plane and they tell you to put your face mask on before you give it to your child? Because it's more important that you... that you're conscious and able to look after them.
Ooh, an analogy.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Apply the analogy to that. They're looking after themselves first so that potentially they can look... That's what I'm advocating.
Right.
Maybe America aren't doing that, but that's what I think should happen, is that when you are economically viable and strong and able to, and everyone is well looked after, yeah, absolutely. You want the whole world to come up together. You don't want a superpower. Like, the idea of superpowers is horrible.
But back to my question, in the short term, should we be allowing these people in? Or do you think that we just have to make a cutoff point of no more, fix your country?
If we can support them, yes. But if they're going to sit in an immigration detention camp, if they're going to sit on...
Well, I don't think they chose that.
Well, they are choosing it because they've decided to come and they know that's where they'll end up.
I don't think that's... okay, yeah, sure.
They're either trying to hide from the system and not be there, or do you know what I mean? And I just... yeah, if we can support them. But I think there's a lot of things we could do to immediately affect these countries and their economies, and we're not doing them because we're too selfish.
I think my problem with this is that I really agree with Josh's point that we should be looking after our own country first so we can help other countries thrive so they stay within their culture and their space. But my problem is with the fact that people in these detention centers, and you were talking about entitlement, I think the thing about entitlement is you say that people aren't entitled to anything, but I think people are entitled to basic human rights. They're entitled to whatever situation they find themselves in, and however they get there, they are entitled to be treated with respect. And the thing about these detention centers is that they are not being treated with human respect. The conditions are so poor. So I don't really think the problem here lies within whether we should or shouldn't be letting people into a country out of moral obligation. I think the point is, we found ourselves in these situations. Why are we not looking at this from a point of view of, okay, we now need to use all the resources we have to make sure these people that are in our country aren't being abused and aren't being neglected? Because we might not be entitled to anything, but we are entitled to food and water and to not be in such shoddy conditions. If you're in a country like that, I think you do
have an
entitlement to that.
Yeah, I don't agree that we're entitled to...
But that's basic human rights. Would you argue that we don't have an entitlement to basic human rights?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair play.
And now you see why we have this podcast.
I don't think we're entitled to food and water. Like, the only thing we're entitled to is freedom. Like, do you know what I mean? To make your own choice. I don't think anything should be forced on you.
So you're saying that people should have freedom to do anything. Is that freedom to take food out of somebody else's mouth and freedom to murder? Do you think that is their human right?
They have a right to do that, 100%.
So you're saying
then they have to also face the fact that they're in a country that very clearly states its rules and states what will happen to you if you break those rules, and that happens to them.
So you're saying
what's happening right
now? You want people to murder, but then by doing that, you're taking away...
No.
Well, you want people, if they want to murder, to be able to murder.
What I mean is that if someone wants to kill someone, they can.
Okay. I wish you could see it. On the one day we'll have a video podcast version of this. You could see James and I and our producer Jane's faces each other as John was going, people have a right to murder people.
People have a right to murder people.
Into a parallel universe. And
they don't have a right to murder people. They just physically can murder people.
No, they have
it
a right.
It is possible, but it's, you don't have a right. You're not going to write in law, thou shall murder if thou want.
But your rights aren't based... If you're basing rights on law, but philosophically is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the law.
Okay.
Right.
Please don't murder people.
Yeah, well, just stress that please don't murder people. Although you have the right to. I am honestly so confused. You can let us know what you think on Twitter at Educating Josh in our polls what you think on the question, do economically stable countries have a moral obligation to allow migrants in? It's time for our last story of the week. That is our very special guest story. It's Jake's story.
So my story is from BBC News, and the headline is more than 300 transgender children a year are now starting on a course of puberty-blocking drugs. The three things you need to know are, this treatment has been available since 2011 and delays the onset of puberty to allow more time for transgender children to figure out their gender identity. Hormone blocker injections delay changes to the voice and development of breasts and body hair. The physical effects of these drugs are reversible, although doctors are unsure of the long-term psychological impact on patients. Some are against the treatment, arguing that gender identity for children is elastic, so can change over time. So my question is, should puberty-blocking drugs be available to under-16s?
20 seconds, Josh, go!
I don't think they should, like, primarily, but the numbers are relevant to me. I don't think they should until they've gone through puberty fully, basically, is what I believe. Like, so much happens when you're going through puberty, and if doctors aren't exactly sure of the effects, then I'm just worried about the person. Like, it's great that they feel like they can and they should and all that kind of stuff, but just what effect is it having on them?
So the thing here physically is that the long-term effects that they're unsure about are just the psychological ones. They're not unsure about the medical effects that it has on your body. Well, because the medical effects are that it's just pausing your puberty. And then once you come off of this, your natural puberty will kick in. And if that doesn't happen, you can always take hormone boosters. But this doesn't actually have
another change. You're messing with stuff that we're not 100% sure about. And we know that messing at that stage in a human being's process could be quite dangerous. And that's what I'm talking about. They 100% have the right to. And the number 16 to me is irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. Right. If you've gone through puberty by the time you're 13, full steam ahead.
The point is that this stops you hitting puberty. So you're saying it's dangerous to take a drug through puberty, but you don't get to puberty.
Well, you're also stopping a process. Your brain goes through so many changes during puberty.
Yeah, but that's psychological. That's not biological. The changes
whether it's biological or psychological, they still affect you. If you don't do it at that age, and you're a boy or a man that really wants to be a woman or a girl, can you do it just as easy at a later stage in life?
This is going to be my question as well, because what's the difference between taking hormones like testosterone or estrogen before puberty or during puberty versus after puberty? Do we know the changes?
The thing is, the puberty blockers are reversible. Puberty is irreversible. There are so many things that happen to your body through puberty that then make any kind of medical transition later in life so much harder, less effective, and you get a lot more issues. A lot of trans people know that they're trans from a young age, and this starts to cause psychological conflict. It causes dysphoria, it causes depression, and this leads to things like self-harm and suicide. And if you're caring really about the person and their emotions, which I would argue someone's emotional well-being a lot of the time takes precedent over their biological well-being.
I don't know, until you know more, until someone can tell me that my child, say when I have children, if I have children, isn't going to be affected and there's no risk of any damage or any danger physically or mentally to them, I wouldn't let them do it.
I mean, I would argue that there is more danger, especially mentally and possibly physically in the form of self-harm or suicide, of letting somebody go through puberty in a gender that they don't associate
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
Especially when they're most hormonal, most erratic.
Once they've gone through puberty, yes.
People are having gender dysphoria before they even go through puberty. So it's not the act of puberty that is making people think, oh, this is the wrong body. It's pre-puberty.
Because what these drugs essentially allow is they stop puberty so that you can then wait a little bit longer, work out what your gender identity is. These people go through puberty, they develop into a sex that they don't identify with, and then they have to have a bunch of surgery to try and counter that.
So if you think about someone like me that was assigned female at birth, if I had been given puberty blockers, there'd be every chance that I wouldn't have to go through top surgery, which is a very, very big surgery, and that's even more damage to my body.
Well, my body
is at so much more risk.
But there are a lot of other ways.
There are other ways
the body changes during puberty. There are facial changes.
The voice change is the biggest thing. Your voice dropping is the most irreversible thing. It almost about testosterone. It's the fastest thing.
For guy to girl.
It's kind of like either way. So if you are assigned male at birth and you go through puberty and your voice drops, that's it. your voice will never be high unless you go through a lot of like vocal training,
is
and
that
that's taught into you.
That at what point do you have to just accept that because of the luck of the draw, you didn't get what you should have got or what you feel like you are at birth, and go, well, until science advances to a point, I need to accept this and be as comfortable in what I am able to get to as I am.
I think
because there were people beforehand that didn't even have the not luxuries, because it's not a luxury, but they didn't have the opportunities that you've got and had to become comfortable in the best way that they could.
From your life experience, from how you've grown up and how you've experienced life, I think that's very true to you. But for me, I think I just see and I've experienced the reality of the fact that for some people, it's like, oh, yeah, let's just wait so you can reach this point of emotional maturity. Some of those people, they don't make it because they're going through such a hard time that they don't see anything else as helping. They just see the out, and that out is death.
There's a lot of kids that don't make it as well, though, without these issues.
Yeah, but the amount of trans people that end up killing themselves is a higher rate than
through the roof.
Any other minority. It's honestly, it's ridiculous.
And there's a potential solution.
Yeah, if there's a solution that says, okay, we can give you this, and it might have effects on you physically, it might have effects on you emotionally,
but it's
this or
no, but this
kill
isn't
yourself.
The solution. The solution's already there. It's not this or kill yourself. It's like saying you'll have an easier transition. This isn't, if you take this away,
you want to make everything easier for people?
Because it allows you to get to a state of emotional maturity that you wouldn't otherwise reach.
That's what this does. It allows you to get to a state of emotional maturity so you can make that informed decision.
Why would that reduce the suicide rate? Why is that going
because
to...
Because you're not seeing your body turn into something that when you look in the mirror, it makes you want to cry.
Because
it
children,
gives you a breakdown.
Children
gives
before
you
very, very, yeah, very good answer.
Children before puberty, other than genitalia, generally look about the same, right? We don't have breasts, we're not hairy, we look basically the same. As long as you've got your pants on, you look kind of similar. And so puberty blockers allow you to stay in that same state and then take medication which puts you towards one of the paths that you want to be on.
The point about this is so you don't have to go through this slow, torturous thing of years and years of seeing your body slowly develop into something. It's like a nightmare. It's your physical body shape that changes a lot. Like kind of your outline, it's your
bone structure.
Yeah, it's your bone structure, it's your face. So
all
much
changes through puberty.
Yeah, because so for example, like if you are assigned female at birth, you're going to get wider hips, you're going to develop breasts. There's a YouTuber called Ash Hardell who said, I have to wear baggy t-shirts because if I don't wear baggy t-shirts, it reminds me I have breasts and that makes me sad. It seems like to us who've been very comfortable in our bodies from our life, except I'm ginger, but whatever. Seems to us like, oh, it's just some hair. Oh, it's just some curviness. But that is a constant reminder in the one vessel you have for your entire life of, I'm not who I think I am. If you imagine like hating everything about your physical form every day, whenever you see a reflection, whenever you look down.
Whenever you talk.
Mm. And if there's just something that can just, it's not changing anything. It's just going, we'll give you a bit more time to think about it.
Like simplifying it down to its like absolute basic. It's like a program, like a piece of software. And I don't, you know, we're more than that. We are human and it's just an analogy, but it's like a piece of software getting to 100% install before you then start changing it just in case
it's the wrong program you're installing.
Oh. Yeah, you're installing the wrong software.
You're installing the wrong software.
All right, well, we're going to have to wrap up there. I'm so sorry, guys. Do you feel like you educated Josh, Jake?
I feel like I've taught him a lot about the trans experience.
Loads.
And trans
I literally have. Yeah. I'm so ignorant to everything on this subject. I've never experienced anything to do with it. I've never met someone before meeting Jake, actually, that's going through or gone through it and parts of it and things like that. I find it absolutely fascinating. It's the most I've felt educated on this podcast, and I'm kind of trying to fight to agree with my original agree with my original statement. But
Well, thank you for coming on the show, Jake. It is time to finish off the show with the quick fire round. Josh, the Netherlands are introducing a ban on the burqa in some public spaces.
Yeah, I feel like about oppression of any kind.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Hundreds of people have complained to Ofcom about the TV show Love Island for, quote, willingly cruel treatment of contestant Danny. The producers showed her a clip of her boyfriend seeing his ex-girlfriend for the first time in a supposed attempt to manufacture extra drama on the show, causing her to have an emotional breakdown.
She signed a contract and she knew what she was getting into. Like,
okay. Oh.
There's no sympathy for anyone that signed up to that show, like, at all.
Okay.
I don't like anyone.
Josh, the first women's razor ad has run where it's showing women having body hair.
What?
Yeah, isn't it weird that we've never had an advert where a woman's had body hair in a razor advert?
So they're shaving a shaved leg.
Yes, they're shaving a shaved leg.
I never realised that.
They're already shaved and they're shaving a shaved like armpit or leg.
Better shave my shaved leg.
Oh, it's so effective. Look at this.
I can't believe I've missed that. That's really weird.
An update from a story from a previous episode. The Spider-Man man who rescued a toddler from a balcony has begun his job for the Paris Fire Brigade.
Cool.
Spider-Man.
Do you remember that story of the guy who climbed up heroically and saved a toddler?
Yay.
He's given a job. Yes, yay.
He's given a job.
And lastly, our feel-good story of the week. The mum and dad from Outnumbered, Claire Skinner and Hugh Dennis, are now dating in real life. Who? Have you seen out? What?
I think they should expand their...
Look, they both had relationships that broke down, and I think it's adorable and it's lovely.
Does
anyone else care about
this?
Shut up. Whatever. No. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Educating. Josh, good first week. Jake, hopefully we'll have you back to be the best educator we've ever had on
Hell
this
yeah.
show.
He's officially Hell the yeah. best educator.
And hopefully we don't all lose our jobs. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at Educating Josh, where there'll be polls and content from each of today's topics, and we'd love to hear your thoughts. We also want you to send in more questions for next week's quick fire round. Please go subscribe, and most importantly, leave a review over on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. This has been Educating Josh, a Studio 71 production. We'll see you next week for another episode of Educating Josh. Goodbye.
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 Say goodbye, Jake. There we go.
Bye.